Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida Governor Rick Scott and most of the state's living former governors are calling on the Senate to pass a proposal giving undocumented students living in Florida in-state tuition. The move comes after a powerful senator decides to block the proposal from being heard in its last committee stop.
Anything that any legislator does in the state of Florida that harms the future of students, their education, it's always going to be a detriment to their political careers.
Also tonight, some lawmakers are hoping a recent Supreme Court decision regarding pregnancy discrimination will send a signal to the Florida legislature to act.
The justices agreed pregnancy discrimination is not permitted in the state of Florida is a really wonderful outcome. I think it would round out the circle nicely if we codified it.
The last 2 weeks of this year's Florida lawmaking session are straight ahead. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Here's a story that was just breaking right before last night's Capitol Report, and we gave you the shorthand version then. This evening, we can dig into the somewhat convoluted details. A proposal to give the children of undocumented immigrants in-state tuition is on life support after a powerful committee chair said he would not hear the bill. Lynn Hatter reports the move has angered backers, and protests are being planned for the upcoming week.
For more than a decade, a bill to grant undocumented students living in Florida in-state tuition has been tried and failed in the legislature. But this year, it appeared the trend would change, with the House passing the bill in the early days of the session, followed by successive committee hearings in the Senate.
And I believe every now and then, you know, we just have to put politics aside and do what's right for our state's future.
That's Senator Jack Latvala speaking during a committee hearing on his immigration tuition bill earlier this month. The proposal had been gaining support, and the Clearwater Republican has said he has the votes to get the bill approved if it makes it to the Senate floor. But it may not get that chance. Thursday, Senate Appropriations Chairman Joe Negron announced he would not give the bill a hearing during his committee Tuesday, the bill's last committee stop, meaning the measure is unlikely to pass this year.
It's kind of treating these individuals as second-class citizens, and considering the racial makeup of these students, you know, happens to be black and brown, it definitely does have a racial tinge and sentiment to it.
Avinash Ramanathan is a sophomore political science student at Florida State University. His group, Students for a Democratic Society, sent out a strongly worded statement blasting Negron's decision. While the proposal had been gaining momentum in the legislature, it's also generated strong backlash. During a Senate Judiciary hearing earlier this month, one of the public speakers, George Fuller, angered Democratic Senator Jeremy Ring with his remarks against the plan.
They should return home and finish their education and help build a vibrant economy so their two main exports in the future are not just drugs and people.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
We can't continue like that. That's not how we're Senate committee hearing. Okay? Please take control.
In a statement, Negron says he believes in-state tuition should be reserved for the legal residents of Florida and notes there is nothing in state law prohibiting undocumented students from attending colleges and universities. Negron also notes some institutions are already waiving out-of-state fees for undocumented immigrants, but Florida Immigrant Coalition spokesman Isabel Souza Rodriguez says that is not a good enough reason for denying the bill a hearing.
It's extremely disappointing. It's extremely infuriating, and it's a bad political move for Senator Negron to do this. And I think he's definitely going to be hearing from his constituents. But the point is that this issue is beyond Negron.
Supporters of the measure plan to rally at the Capitol Monday to urge Senate President Don Gates to pull the bill out of the Appropriations Committee and give it a hearing on the chamber floor. Gates has said he is personally opposed to the measure, but he's also said he wouldn't block it if it cleared the committee process. Governor Rick Scott, along with several former governors, have issued statements in support of the bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Today, there's no Florida law on the books that protects pregnant women from workplace discrimination. For months, the Florida Supreme Court has grappled with that decision, and this week they ruled employers cannot discriminate against pregnant women under the state Civil Rights Act. But as Sasha Cordner reports, one lawmaker says that still needs to be put into state statute.
For more than 30 years, pregnancy has been protected from employer discrimination under federal law. But in the Sunshine State, it's a different story. Under the Florida Civil Rights Act of 1992, employers are not allowed to discriminate against their employees in a number of areas, including race, sex, and marital status. But pregnant women are not included. And when faced with pregnant discrimination cases, Democratic Representative Lori Berman says there's been a lot of confusion in the courts. She's the chair of the Women's Legislative Caucus, as well as the sponsor of a measure that adds pregnancy as a protected class under the state civil rights law.
My bill totally is in agreement with the Florida Supreme Court case. The Supreme Court case said that pregnant women are covered under the Florida Civil Rights Act. So the bill and the court case coalesced together nicely.
Berman is talking about the recent Florida Supreme Court decision regarding the case of Peggy Delva. Delva claims after she became pregnant, the South Florida property developing company she worked for over-scrutinized her work and refused to allow her to do her job when she came back from maternity leave. Two lower courts ruled in favor of her employer, stating the Florida Civil Rights Act does not cover pregnant women, but in a 6-1 opinion, a majority of the justices ruled that employers cannot discriminate against pregnant women since technically that could be based on sex, which is covered under state law. But the justices acknowledge that it's not explicitly stated in state law. That's why Berman says it's the perfect time for the Florida legislature to take that next step.
I think it's a really positive sign for my legislation. I think we should codify the Supreme Court decision. It is legal precedent, but I think it would round out the circle nicely if we codified it and made it part of Florida law also.
So far, there's been overwhelming support for legislation in her chamber. It also has the backing of a number of organizations, including the Business and Profession of Women, the National Organization of Women, and the League of Women Voters. The Florida Commission on Human Relations, which requested the legislation, is a big supporter, too. Any cases that deal with unlawful employment practices are filed with them. But at its last stop in the House Judiciary Committee, the bill did face some resistance from the National Federation of Independent Business, which represents more than 10,000 businesses in the state. The group's lobbyist, Tim Nungesser, says the businesses he represents are afraid that employers could be held liable for thousands of dollars in damages for these types of lawsuits, frivolous suits included. He cited a UCLA College of Law study that specifically looked at employers having to pay for attorneys' fees.
The median cost for preparing a response to the complaint is $5,000. The median cost for responding and negotiating a settlement was $6,700. The median cost to litigate this and provide private counsel through the trial was $150,000. Now, I will tell you that we are here representing small businesses. Small businesses generally do not have the type of insurance that would cover this type of lawsuit. So what we're talking about here is actual money out of the business's pockets.
Some Republican lawmakers also expressed reservations about a provision in the bill that they say could force employers to pay for abortions and would like that clarified in the bill. And while she believes those arguments are a stretch, Berman has agreed to look into it. And with unanimous passage of that panel, the bill now heads to the House floor. Meanwhile, its companion already passed the full Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Florida's jobless rate edged up in March. Governor Rick Scott countering the slight increase in the percentage of Floridians out of work by touting the number of jobs created during the month. The March jobless rate for Florida was 6.3%. That's just 1/10 of a percentage point higher than the month before, but it still reversed a steady trend of decreasing unemployment numbers over the past few years. Governor Scott, who's made job creation his constant mantra, was quick to point out that the state's private sector added nearly 21,000 jobs in March. The total since Scott took office, just over 500,000 jobs in the private sector. During the same period, the number of public sector jobs in Florida shrank by more than 23,000. Even with a slight increase for March, the state's jobless rate remains below the national unemployment average, which now stands at 6.7%. Still to come on Capitol Report. Lawmakers are set to take up a measure next week that would keep better track of who is working as a behavior analyst.
There's no background screening. There's no training requirements. There's no board of certification to keep up with everybody.
The Senate is set to vote on whether Florida should have an official rather than honorary poet laureate.
Most of the states do have poet laureates, and for Florida not to have one is a little bit of a glaring omission.
And a veteran member of Florida's Capitol Press Corps talks about politics and morality.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust. Empowerment. Education. Employment.
With just about 2 weeks left until lawmakers can start packing up to go home, a committee in the state Senate is planning a last-minute marathon next week in an attempt to shoehorn about 60 bills through the legislative process. We get more on that story from Regan McCarthy.
Pension plans, guardianship, charities, state contracting, malt beverage tastings, worker compensation, and substance abuse services. Whew. Those are just a few of the topics lawmakers are scheduled to tackle during an 8-hour committee meeting Tuesday. While many of those bills are likely to pass to a Senate floor hearing without much of a hitch, others are likely to garner something of a lengthy discussion. One measure lawmakers are set to take up during that meeting would create new regulations for behavior therapists.
Anyone can call themselves a behavior analyst and offer services to an unknowing public, all without any consequence, because there is no regulation in Florida law.
That's Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean. He's proposing a bill that would create a state board of applied behavior analysis that would oversee a licensing process for behavior analysts and would create a penalty for any behavior analyst working without a license. Bean says behavior analysts often work with children, especially those with autism. And retired Florida State University behavior analysis professor John Bailey says he thinks the measure is important and will help to protect vulnerable families and individuals. He says behavior analysts sometimes have more personal contact with their clients than psychologists.
Behavior analysts work wherever the behavior problem presents. And in most cases, the problem is not in an office. The problem presents in the community. It presents in the home. And it may present in any other kind of establishment where the person has an individual behavior problem.
And Michelle Dunham, the mother of an autistic teenager, says a certification program could have helped her to find more effective help for her child more quickly. She also says she's happy to see a provision in the bill that would require analysts to get background checks. She says without those protections, it's easy to imagine a situation where an unlicensed analyst could create a dangerous situation.
They're going to say that they're here to help your children. They're going to say that they're a behavior analyst. And then I find out this person has a criminal background that I let in my home. I let them in a room with my child because my child is tantruming, and they need me to step out.
Meanwhile, others are worried the measure could weaken the state's current regulations. Venice Republican Senator Nancy Dietert says she's received calls along those lines. But Bean says his plan should do just the opposite. Bean says he's also heard from psychologists who are concerned about the measure. But he says he feels certain his bill will do more good than harm.
Some feel that that behavior analysts may infringe on their practices of what they do. Others will say not. And I have met with many behavior analysts and have said there are clear distinctions. And that's why we said the bill will not limit or infringe on services provided by licensed psychologists.
Currently, behavior analysts can seek certification from a certification board. But officials say since there's no requirement in Florida to get certified, they've got little ability to enforce rules. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Anyone who's kept up with the doings at the Florida Capitol for any length of time is probably familiar with the name Lucy Morgan. For years, Morgan was the Tallahassee bureau chief for the St. Petersburg Times, which is now the Tampa Bay Times. She started in the journalism biz back in 1965 and only retired from the profession in January of last year. Still, she's often called upon to share her insights on the Florida politics she knows so well. Just this past week, Morgan was part of a panel discussion on politics and public morality hosted by The Village Square, a Tallahassee-based nonpartisan organization that holds community forums on various topics. The talk turned to political corruption and whether it's getting better or worse.
I think public corruption is on the rise. Even if you go beyond the statistics of public officials who are dragged into court and sentenced to jail, we are way beyond that. And I think the reason for it is simply money. There is so much money at loose in the system right in our political system right now at every level.
A big reason for this, Morgan thinks, is the fact the U.S. Supreme Court has twice equated campaign contributions with freedom of speech. At the state level, there have been usually feeble and half-hearted efforts to moderate the impact of money on political influence. 8 years ago, the Florida legislature passed a law restricting the freebies that lobbyists used to shower upon lawmakers in hopes of obtaining favorable legislative outcomes. But Morgan believes that was mostly an exercise in window dressing.
So although our state law says you can't go buy, that a lobbyist cannot go buy a cup of coffee for a legislator or take him to a fancy dinner, he can give him $500,000 to put in his little political committee. And there's no one there to stem that tide.
However, for those not well versed in the art of analyzing campaign contribution reports, such evidence of undue influence might go unrecognized. Morgan says that's one of the reasons she picked the profession she did.
There's a little saying that I sort of adopted from the Pinellas Sheriff's Department's Vice Squad. About 40 years ago, I saw it, and it so fit what I do that I adopted it. It's the phrase is, if you can't get them to see the light, make them feel the heat. And I don't think there's a more appropriate description of journalism than that.
After so many years watching the political process, Morgan admits there is no realistic expectation that the impact of money can ever be totally eliminated from the equation. She does think there are some practical changes to campaign law that might help even the political playing field somewhat.
If you limited, for instance, the time in which a person can run, most other countries don't have three-year election cycles. Many of our legislators win election on a Tuesday and on the following day go to the Division of Elections and open the account for their next campaign 2 or 4 years out and begin to rake in the money that way.
In recent years, many have predicted the death of traditional political news coverage. Most newspapers have cut their news staffs drastically. Television tends to focus on the horse race aspect of politics or the scandal du jour. Cable news and talk radio are often little more than partisan echo chambers. Yet Morgan remains upbeat.
I'm more optimistic than most. I think that we are going through a period of change. Certainly everything we do is becoming much more digital and much less on paper. Our forefathers told us we were going to get to this point, and some of us didn't pay much attention to it.
Still, she believes it's up to the electorate to keep itself informed, no matter how the political process and the media that cover it may change. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or MAD, is objecting to an abstinence-based plan that would let judges order twice-daily breath tests instead of ignition interlock devices for repeat DUI offenders in Florida. But the head of the National Sheriff's Association says the 24/7 sobriety model is a better way of keeping drunken drivers off the road for good. MAD National Director Jan Withers today asked Florida House Speaker Will Weatherford to reject the plan, which was approved by a House committee last week and is known elsewhere as the 24/7 sobriety program. MAD believes amendments allowing for twice-a-day testing or 24/7 sobriety programs are okay, she said, but these programs should never replace the use of ignition interlock for a convicted drunk driver. Instead, MAD wants Florida lawmakers to expand the use of the interlock devices, which keep vehicles from starting if a driver is drunk, to first-time offenders whose blood alcohol content is above 0.08. Current state law requires the devices for second- and third-time offenders, as well as for those with a blood alcohol content of 0.15 or greater. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Now here's Ronald J. Eben with a preview of many more issues facing lawmakers when they return to Tallahassee from the week-long Passover Easter break on Monday.
When returning from a holiday break on Monday, the Florida House will hold a floor session from 2 to 5 that includes focusing on education issues. The House will take up a school choice measure that would make a series of changes in charter school laws. In part, the bill would allow entities that operate charter schools in other states to apply in Florida to be considered a high-performing charter school system that could help those operators open schools in Florida. Also, the House will consider a proposal that would change requirements for early learning and child care providers. Among other issues, the House is expected to take up a measure that would seek to prevent insurers from discriminating against customers because of gun ownership. The Senate Rules Committee meets from 1 to 4 Monday. Among the bills up for action is a measure by Senator Ana Tori Flores that revises the circumstances under which a pregnancy in the third trimester may be terminated. It requires a physician to perform certain examinations to determine the viability of a fetus. There is a bill that seeks to provide that a wrongfully incarcerated person is exempt from certain application procedures for compensation. There will also be an effort to put the legislature on record in favor of the President of the U.S. giving final approval for construction and completion of the Keystone XL pipeline. Those are some of the bills on the agenda for Monday, April 21st. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Legislation to fix Florida's polluted springs is moving in the state Senate, but not in the state House. The Senate Springs Plan would control the amounts of fertilizer allowed into waterways, redirect wastewater, and replace septic systems for some homeowners. The State Department of Environmental Protection would be tasked with finding the springs in most need of help and creating protection zones around them. Documentary stamp tax revenue, which is collected on real estate purchases, would be funneled toward water protection under the plan. The Senate bill has passed two committees, with one to go before a vote by the full chamber, but the House version of the plan has yet to be heard in any committee, and with just 2 weeks left in the 2014 legislative session, there's a question as to whether or not it will be. Finally tonight, Florida could soon appoint a cultural ambassador of sorts to help spread the word about words. As Jessica Palumbo reports, the bill creates a state poet laureate position and seems poised to soon meet the governor's pen.
The O Miami Poetry Festival is going on now. The month-long fest is back for its third year.
You took my style, I'm taking it back. Coming back like Return of the Jedi. Sucker MCs in a place that said I could only rock rhymes and only rock crowds, but never rock records. How You Like Me Now.
That's Cool Moe Dee rapping lyrics from his song How You Like Me Now at the first ever O Miami Fest in 2011. Executive director and founder, 35-year-old poet Scott Cunningham, says the goal for this year's fest is the same as always.
We try to deliver a poem to every single person in Miami-Dade County.
To attempt that, O Miami goes beyond poetry readings and book signings. Programs have included poetry-infused dance and film, and even a basketball tournament.
When people are on the bench or in timeouts or something like that, you know, we'll have like little mini readings.
Cunningham says he started writing poems as a kid to process his feelings before growing up to be a nationally recognized poet. He says the approach his festival takes, trying to show people how much fun poetry is, should also be the role of the proposed Florida State Poet Laureate.
The people who take on the position should take it on as an advocacy position, and not an advocacy position in the way of, oh, I gotta tell everyone how good this is for you, you know, like, it's time to eat your poetry oatmeal.
Florida's last poet laureate, Ed Skellings, died 2 years ago after having served a life term. The Florida House has passed a bill limiting poet laureate terms to 4 years and outlining how nominees would be vetted by a state cultural council, the Secretary of State, and finally the governor. Florida State Poets Association President Joe Kavanaugh has been among those pushing for the new process.
The 4-year term will be spent furthering poetry, supporting poetry, particularly in our schools. We think we need to work with young people to get them interested in poetry and to realize that, in the words of Peter Menke, who is currently the Poet Laureate of St. Petersburg, Florida, poetry is the emotional history of the world.
That goal has bookworms excited. The Poet Laureate program might continue. Key West Island Bookstore manager Suzanne Orchard says she supports anything that gets kids to pick up a book or a pen.
Poetry is usually a good starting point for a lot of people that are interested in writing.
When the bill unanimously passed the House, Plant City Republican Representative Dan Rollerson celebrated with a poem of his own.
I am honored to have presented in prose the poetry bill to my House colleagues, and he knows. It may pass both houses, and what's more, it may be signed by the governor.
Perhaps that's true. Time will tell if the vote in the Senate goes as well. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2014 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through Delta Airlines and Delta Connection partner ExpressJet, with direct flights from Tallahassee to Atlanta connecting to over 315 destinations worldwide. Fares and information available online at delta.com. And from Bryant Miller Olive, a law firm practicing government law, consulting and litigation, and public finance, serving Florida for over 40 years. Bryant Miller Olive, online at bmolaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.